We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
It's Tuesday, October 25th. I'm Jeff Schwartz, and this is just me, Jeff Schwartz, smiling you, powered by the Varsity Podcast Network, because we have a special guest today, longtime NFL offensive lineman, Andrew Whitworth. His first year out of retirement, guys, we are talking all things offensive line play. We had a discussion over social media about things. Wanted to air it out on the podcast. We do it all here. It's going to be fantastic. For those who do not know, Andrew Whitworth is a national championship in high school, a national champion in college, a national champion with the Rams, second round pick by the Bengals in 2006, played forever, just retired this past year. Also won the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award for his fantastic work in the community. We'll get to all that in just a second. Please, if you love this podcast, if you're listening, I know you do, please rate, review, and subscribe. Love getting the feedback from all you guys. It's very important. We'll be back on Wednesday with our traditional gambling podcast, our wagering podcast, heading into the weekend. We had a good weekend, 3-2 again. Also, if you came here for any other football takes for the week, FoxSports.com, I wrote an article about the NFC. Go find all the takes there. I also want to have a guest take. I knew Tom Brady would play bad, and I did not want Gabe to come on here and brag about his hatred of Tom Brady and how it's finally paying off after 23 years. So thankfully, Andrew Whitworth can help us avoid all that conversation. And here it is with Andrew Whitworth, the big fella himself. Well, here he is, Andrew Whitworth. Welcome to the program, buddy. Glad to have you on.
Man, I appreciate it, brother. I'm glad to be on.
How are we feeling? It's 8 weeks into the NFL season. You're not playing this year. Like, how's the body? How's the mind doing? Anything like you still want to get out there or not?
You know what? The best feeling I've had all year is I've had no itch whatsoever to hit a goal. So zero. I got no interest.
Even with like the Rams left tackle, the Cowboys, like none.
Look here, you know, I've watched Nick Bosa play enough. Don't let that guy touch me, all right? Listen, don't touch me. Even when I see him in a couple of weeks, I'm going to tell him, do not touch me. Even when I'm walking by, I don't want to feel those hands one more time.
Are you enjoying, like, the post-NFL, the Amazon stuff? Like, is it kind of hitting your spot, what you want to do in your first year out?
It really is. I mean, I've had this conversation, obviously, with some guys that are done playing, and to me it's been – really fun to just still have a dabble of being involved and paying attention and then getting to go in the arenas and just feel the energy of the stadiums. I mean, I hadn't been in, you know, Kansas City probably since early in my career.
Right.
So to get to go there for their opener at home, I mean, just that energy and the feel of it, it's been really fun to just be there, see it from afar, enjoy all the little things you probably didn't pay attention to when you were playing. That part's been really rewarding.
That's awesome. All right. Well, the reason we have you on to talk offensive line play is we got a discussion this week about how to make the position better. We'll get into that in just a second. But so far this season, what are things you've noticed about the position? Good, bad, some good units, some bad units through 7 weeks now.
I think for me, it's paying attention really to groups and what they do well and probably who's probably all around, you know, better than others. I think that's really one of the things you look at it. Every offense to me, I use this word a lot, but the word exposure, but it's like every offense is different. I mean, you know, you look at some lines, the coordinators do a tremendous job of never putting them in a lot of tough positions. There's balls out fast, there's screens, there's all these things. And then you watch groups where you're like, look, I can tell this guy knows this group is really good and they don't care what they do. They feel confident. And I think when people talk about Philadelphia and their line, I think that's one of those groups that really to me resonates with is that you don't have to concern yourself with one call when you've got that offensive line. I mean, there's nothing you're worried about putting them in front of or a game situation that you're worried about that group being in. And I think that really, to me, that's what separates groups this early in the year is who is it that needs to have a certain game go a certain way for them to be successful.
It does feel like there's more of that this year, right? Like there's a couple, like there's like five really good offensive lines and then there's like a big drop off where I have not seen that in previous years.
Yeah, it kind of feels like there's a couple groups, you know, if they don't have the lead this game and this group, it's about to get real ugly real fast. And so I think that's the thing. And you see more of these. I mean, it's like everybody. It's the water screamer, you know, quick screens, get the ball out of their hand fast as can be. A lot of that type stuff where, you know, you don't see as many teams confident in dropping back with the quarterback sitting in the middle of the pocket.
I mean, I like the Lions offensive line, but I felt bad for them yesterday. They got behind, and that Cowboys pass rush, buddy, that is
You don't want any part of that. I mean, that's one of those games. Look, it's like when I was young, when you went on the road to Indy, if Freeney and Mathis got free reign and they're up two scores, I mean, you're just like, hey, Mom, turn the TV off. It's going to be a rough day at the park.
Okay, so I could not stop a spin move. That was my like kryptonite. Could you stop the spin move?
I hated Freeney's spin move. You know, to me, you know, I wasn't somebody who's ever like a natural pass setter. So that spin move, I was always catching it a little late. I had periods of my career where I blocked him well, but my rookie year and a couple times throughout my career, it's like he just sneak it on one time. You just overset just a hair thinking you're going to stop something. And man, that dude, he was unbelievable at it.
And you played in the old RCA Dome on the turf probably, right? Like the turf.
Oh, man, the fast turf. I mean, it was a 100-meter sprint out there, that's for sure.
All right. So we got in a discussion this week about why the position is not as good, in my opinion, as we used to be. Like, as a collective, as an offensive line collective, we're not as good. I just laid out this in practice. We're not practicing enough, right? Which is definitely true. You've been playing long enough. You were with three CBAs, I think, right? You were with the pre-2011 CBA, then the next 10 years, and now obviously the new CBA. I was part of the old one where you transitioned from two-a-days to one-a-days, and now even there's like no practice. So I give a very general statement about, I've said this for a while now, it's easy to correlate the less practice time now with the poor offensive line play and the injuries, by the way. Ton of injuries now across the NFL. You push back on that. So let's just start with that premise. We practice a lot less now, which is not debatable. Does that hurt the position?
I think in general, it's one of the factors. I just don't like that for me. I think for O-line and really O-line play in general, I think you think of, you know, 80s, 90s, 2000s, all these historic O-linemen and who was really good and what groups were really good. This position is just built on something that it's tough nowadays with what practices, what the rules are to instill. And so I think it's sometimes less about the reps. It's more about the mentality. And I think the reps go into that, right? But the mentality of this position has just changed. I know for me, like some of the young guys we drafted in the last half of my career there, I mean, they're doing like hip mobility over hurdles every day instead of working out. Like it's like the mentality of who they are and what they are at this position is so night and day different. It's like, hey, man, come over here and put a weight, you know, put a couple weights on your back and get a squat in. Like, no, man, I need to loosen my hips up for a little while first. I don't even know if our era knew what a warm-up was, right?
No.
It was like, hey, warm-up was you're not going to lift quite as many weights as you are on your second set, all right? So that was your warm-up.
Even on the field, like a warm-up was like, all right, eight-man sled, let's go. Like, go hit the sled for – you do three reps and let's go right individual.
There I tell no, these like, young guys, I ask them if they know what mattress drills are, and they're like, what? I'm like, when I got to Cincinnati, Paul Alexander laid a mattress outside the chute, and one guy sat in the chute, and the other guy fired off and just waylaid you onto the mattress, and that was the mattress drill. Like, you just got pile-drived into a mattress to start practice. That was the warm-up.
Bro, in college, our offensive line coach, he didn't use a hammer that he had previously used, but he used a hat, like something that hit us on the head. We came out of the chutes too high.
Yeah.
Just like smack, boom, smack on the head. And I'm not advocating for 2 days again.
Yeah.
But I do think how we practice is a big issue too, right? Like to me, the position is best learned doing, right? Like it's a position where you have to get your hands in the right place, your feet in the right place. And I put this general like practice as the umbrella of all these things, which probably is not fair because there's many different things that are involved here. But to me, again, like, when you're not doing, even at the basic level, just not doing, we're not doing it as much anymore. It doesn't help the progress of the young guys who, by the way, look, from college now, it's a different game in college, different game in high school now. Oh, I was watching a high school game the other day on TV. Look at a Division III game. Like they're spread out, zone read, shotgun, pass, just different game now. So when they come up to the NFL, I don't think guys are just as prepared now. And that's why the practice thing to me seems so important. And maybe that's too basic.
Yeah, that's what kind of what I'm saying is I think that's almost I don't like hearing national, especially you hear some of these broadcasters say that. And it's like, all right, hold on. Give these guys some credit who are good at the position that there's a process to how they're good. And it's not just practice reps. It's all the above. It's like, all right, if that is my situation, then how do I overcome it? Like, what do I do in the off season to prepare myself? Because one of the things besides really saying, yes, it's a different generation and all this kind of stuff, and they aren't exposed to some of the things we were. But the other part is a lot of them in college play, you block a guy for half a second.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Right. And it's like they haven't ever figured out how to wrestle and fight and do all these things. And yeah, practice can do that. But there's many other ways, too. I mean, throughout my career, you know, I trained so many different ways. I didn't want everything from jiu-jitsu to Muay Thai stuff to training with Olympic lifters. To every year, I just try different things and try different stuff to prepare my body for seasons. I never wanted to do the same thing every year. But then also, I came in the league, probably an advantage, with a guy like Paul Alexander, who's more of a scientist of the position than probably a drill sergeant. And so it was always figuring out the way you move better, figuring out yourself and how you could do things better. There's no one way to do things type of thing. So I was always in that mindset. And I think some of these young guys, like the reality is maybe it's not the practice reps as much as, all right, you can't talk to them till, you know, April. And then they get to April and it's just team stuff. And it's like, when do they get their individual work when they're preparing? Anthony Munoz told me this when I was like in my fourth year in Cincinnati. I never forgot it. He's like, Whit, you're a great dude. He's like, I played the game. I loved it. He's like, remember this, the off season is the time to be the most selfish you can possibly be. He's like, you have literally got to be selfish about preparing yourself to play in the off season.
So how do guys start this process though? The things that you did, the things that other guys do, like, how do they begin that if there's no one in the building? This is, I think, another problem. There's so many issues to talk about.
Oh, yeah.
Like there's, you know, there's not a lot of older players anymore. And not a lot of guys that kind of did it. And I'm not saying the old way is the better way, because I definitely think, you know, training with Duke, for example, like there are new ways to do things that are very good for you. But like, how do guys begin the process if they're young of figuring out, okay, here's how I have to train because I'm not getting this training in the facility anymore?
Yeah, I think one of the things you see really, I mean, obviously it's always existed in NFL football, the guys who prepare in the offseason, the guys who don't. But I think you see it even more now is really talented guys who just have no idea how to handle that break time or how to handle when it's not a structured, hey, you have to do this X, Y, and Z right now. And I think it's really cool to me. I've been an advocate of this is I got a chance to visit some of these other leagues and sports leagues and in the NHL, you know, whereas we have player development, a guy who, he was a former player and he's helping you do your bank account and like, you know, take care of mom's tickets. It's like, they have an actual program where the former players are true player development. They take the young guys out on the rink.
Oh wow!
You know, to clear the grass and do drills with them, and then they also do all that other type stuff. So they actually have a true development program for their young guys, where they're getting extra time with these veteran players who've played the game, out learning how to prepare and those kind of things. So to me, yeah, I think it's tough, but that's why you have guys like Duke out there. That's why there's other ways to go about it. And I think to me, it's about young guys realizing, hey, you know, whether I'm getting reps or not, it's not an excuse. What are you going to do about it? Yeah. Is the mentality that I want to create. And I think you watch, there's guys who do it. I look at Alaric Jackson, who has recently come into playing a lot for the Rams now with all their injuries. You know, he went in at right guard, played well. Joseph Noteboom, unfortunately, gets hurt. He goes in at left tackle and plays well last week. I mean, he's a guy from day one, like this guy in the facility every day, always working, always watching tape. Like even when I'd offer him stuff, it'd be like, hey, he might listen. And then he'd be like, hey, let me go. Like, I want to do it my own way, which I love, because to me, that's the drive it takes to be any good. And nowadays you almost have to come in internally driven, or you're in a lot of trouble. Whereas when we played, you might kind of be in between, and somebody's going to make you get that way, or you're going to go.
Yeah, because you show up on March 15th, and you were there from March 15th till July 1st. One thing that I see as a concern, I've mentioned this for years now, is we don't as a group like meet anymore. Like we don't, like the offensive line used to hang out all the time. You spent all your time there, and you watch film together. I watch games on Sunday. I think to myself, because I was not the best athlete. I didn't move terribly well, so I had to know everything that was coming. Otherwise, I was cooked. And I watch games now. I'm like, guys, it's 3rd and 8. You didn't see a TE coming. Like, you don't talk to each other. Like to me, and maybe I include that in the practice envelope, like umbrella, because to me, like I grew up, I had Jordan Gross and Ryan Khalil. They were great mentors. Like we sat in the film room for breakfast and after practice, after meetings, and just watched film as a group. And the iPads have ruined that, I feel like. Like there's no camaraderie anymore in watching film together.
No, there's not. I mean, you come in the facility, even for me last year, and it's like, hey, you guys seen it? It's like, yeah, I watched it at home, you know? And it's like, nobody has any interest in watching it together or...
It's not new to me.
Yeah, and it's like they might pull up one play they want to look at, and that's it. And then they think like they're done because it's like, oh, you showed them this one play. And it's like, no, why don't we talk through? I'll never forget when I showed up here in L.A., I had John Sullivan that came the same time as me.
Yeah,
and we line up in OTAs, and this guy calls out like the defense, the rotation, the mic, you know, everybody's assignment. And I'm like, now this is NFL football. I love this guy, right?
Oh, yeah.
So, but now you don't have any of that type stuff anymore. I mean, now it's like, can the center point to where he's actually going? We don't know. We hope so. I mean, and it's like no communication whatsoever. It's wild how many teams that literally people, I think people be blown away. They can't function just because they can't communicate. And that's it. Like, just a lack of communication.
I mean, also, too, to be fair, there's more in quarterbacks than ever before. I mean, we used to make the points all the time. Now quarterbacks go up. And they're in the pass game, how many teams actually do their own identification? It's the quarterback, right? He just goes up. It's like, we got these two guys. We got this guy. Go, set hut. Let's play.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the reality. I mean, when I got in the NFL in 06, you know, you didn't get in the shotgun unless it was 3rd and 25. So, but now, yeah, they got a lot of different looks. There's a lot of pressures, packages, everything. Like I said before, I think that also there's a transition really too. I had this conversation with Matt Burke with the Cardinals this past Thursday night. Is nowadays what they know defensively and how they understand how we do everything. It's so dynamic. Now defenses know not only how to hit the weakness of an offensive protection, but how to get the weakness of exactly who it is in that protection. That's the weakest. We'll set this blitz up, this pressure to attack that sole person now. And I think that's really how they can do things that's changed the game. And so if you can't communicate and you don't have a background, I think that that's really the toughest part for young linemen coming in the league, is that now you don't get to start off with 4 down fronts and let's just point to who we're sliding to. You're like, man, hold on. Who's down? Who's walking around? I have Jalen Ramsey on this play. Like, it's like, you know, it's insane what these guys are facing.
You mentioned exposure on our Twitter thread. I think it's the right way to go here. Like to me, and I mean, Duke has mentioned this too, so I'm using some of his words as well. Like the coaching on the defensive line side, I think has exceeded the offensive line side, right? Like they're able to find matchups now that we didn't have to deal with. And it really puts the offensive line in a very tough spot. And we see how many pass rushers now. It used to be, you know, pass rusher would just line up on one side. Like that was their side. And now, you know, you got Parsons and Lauren. You got these guys moving everywhere each weekend. And to me, our coaching is not caught up to the defensive line coaching right now.
Yeah, I think there's too many O-line robots, in my opinion. I mean, there's a lot of robotic coaching, and it's just you watch the D-line, they've gotten out of that. It didn't just shoot your hands. It's, man, you face Aaron Donald, it's like, you know, you better bring a gun because you can't use a knife because the guy's chopping knives down in practice, right? So, I mean, you watch this guy, it's like he'll break your arm if you leave it in there. So it's one of those things that – there's so much that's left to be done for O-line play and figuring out how do we grow the way D-line has. And that's kind of my point is that I think that sometimes we make it just about the practice O-line's getting, and it's more about are the schemes getting better, the attack of the defensive line's getting better, they're getting better technically. And it's like, what are we doing to progress and not just be a, hey, take two kicks and punch. Like, it's like, all right, that's not going to work anymore. You know, what's the next progression how we protect? I'll never forget meeting Jason Kelsey when he was a rookie. I tried to teach him how to double under. He tells this story all the time. And I'm telling him how I just sit back and just swallow people.
Hey, you're huge.
Just engulf folks when they get closer. And he looks at me and he goes, hey man, I'm never going to be able to block like that. And I was like, you know what? You're probably right. But he's turned out pretty dang good. Yeah. So he worked out for him.
I mean, but that's the important part, right? Is like coaches have to be flexible. I understand if you want to teach a technique. I'm fine with that. I play with six offensive line coaches. Like I get a technique, but like I play with an offensive line coach who wanted me to be like Chris Snee. Like I'm not 6'3", 310. I'm 6'7", 340. Like I'm not that player coach. Like I can't do what he can do. He's a better player than me. Like it's okay if we do stuff differently. I feel like a lot of our coaches haven't progressed enough to where they're allowing players. You have to do their system. Like I get that part of it, but just creating an environment where the player can do what works best for them.
Yeah, I think you look at, I always make this example to people is that if you go to the 32 teams in the NFL and watch all the left tackles, you're very rarely going to find two guys that set the same, use their hands the same, move the exact same way. Like it doesn't happen. So if I'm a coach, how am I trying to teach guys? Like it makes no sense. If I can show you that the 32 best in the world all move differently, then the idea that there's only one way to do something is already deleted. Like it's already wrong. Because I hate when I walk outside and I watch an O-line drill and it's like, all right, everybody squeeze your knees together and squeeze your elbows. And like, I'm like, what? Like, show me how many guys actually block like that. Like, this just doesn't happen. Like, where'd you read that? In what book? Right? Like, it just doesn't happen. And so to me, I am a huge advocate of guys learning, like, you got to watch tape. You got to study players. And I don't mean watch tape a D-line. Watch other really good O-line across the league and find what fits your style. Like, how do you move the right way? How do you feel strong? You may be a knees out guy. You may be, engulfer. Like, you may want to wrestle dudes. You may be a puncher. That may be your style, but you've got to find it. And that's kind of what I mean is to me, you don't have as many practice reps, but that can't be your crutch. You got to go find your style and who you are to find a way to be good at the position. And I think O-line coaches have got to open up to, hey, there's a lot of different ways to do this. What do we want it to look like? What do we want the play to feel like? How do we want to execute it? That's important. But every guy moving the exact same way is not possible.
So how do offensive line coaches kind of catch up to defensive line coaches? I'm not saying O-line coaches are bad, but the idea that, like, again, the exposure part of it, right? Like, okay, they're going to move someone here over my worst guy. How do we make sure that guy's ready to play that week?
Yeah, I think to me, it's exactly what we kind of just touched on. It's finding what is best for each player. I mean, I look, you know, you just look at a line and you start saying, hey, does this guy seem like a guy who doesn't move his feet as well and he's powerful? All right, I'm going to teach this guy to really get on people right now because you got no chance. Or is he a guy that's not going to be able to set as well, but he can vertical set and he's an engulfer? Like, you know, you hear these O-line coaches argue all the time, like, vertical, angle sets, jump sets, like everyone's wrong and just like, you know, going to hell, depending on which decision they make. And it's like, no, like maybe that fits them. Like Teron Armstead, I could never set some of the ways Teron Armstead could set.
That crossover on the Y9 he does.
I would literally, I would look so horrific trying to do that. It's just unbelievable. But, and Jason Peters, like some of those jumps he does, like no way I could ever do that. Yeah. Joe Thomas, I could never set like that. Like it's just never going to happen. I would love to be able to kick like that for anything. Can't do it. So I've got to find my way. And I was somebody who couldn't kick set. I can remember when I came out for the draft, like they lined me up with all the O-line coaches and they're like, dude, you don't know how to like kick and push and kick. I'm like, no, like I can waddle backwards and just swat, like just grab people.
Because you didn't do it in college or you just not natural?
I just never really could, man. I mean, like hips wise, I've always had hip issues. I've had torn labrum since I got in the league. And so yeah. I just never could, like my hips never opened up that way. So I never could kick. So it always was like for me, I spent all my time during the week trying to figure out whether I could take a set. I just want to be able to take a set because I couldn't move that well. And so as I got older, I learned to just waddle back and sometimes have to step back. That's all I could do because I couldn't kick. And so it was like, all right, I'll get back and then I'll play basketball. And that's literally just what I would do.
So did you have to work with the left guard to let him know, like, hey, I'm not going vertical on third and long. Like we have to find a way to kind of be at the same level, even though, because I'm not going to be able to kind of do that traditional, like, third and long pass set.
Yeah. So what I would actually do is a lot of times, you know, watching tape, I would up kick my left foot and kind of just push myself behind his, like kind of backpedal like a DB behind his hip and then play the play from there. And so that's really the only way I could do it. So I would, most of the time, I always liked for guards to cover their guy up a lot and I would drag a bunch because to me, I had long enough arms that I could really like push on the three and like make the defensive end have to make a choice pretty soon to where he really didn't have anywhere to go if he didn't make an early decision. So I just started to learn how to use some of those things to my advantage and play off of it. And I think that's the big thing we're talking about is our guys actually studying the game, not to, hey, I remember having Cedric Obwehi and I love Cedric to death, but he came in and was like, you know, watching Tyron Smith tape. And I'm like, hey, listen, I'm going to tell you right now, dude, I love you. I think, you know, you're not Tyron Smith, okay?
No,
that arm and that hand is like made from God, okay? So I just want you to understand that ain't happening for anybody else in the league, okay? So look at somebody else. But it's like one of those things that's just certain guys have certain traits and you got to find what your trait is and then figure out how to work on the things you're not as good at.
How important are guys like Duke to help with the development of players who really, you know, again, they're not maybe not getting it from their coaching staff, but they're able to go to see him. And there's plenty of other guys who train offensive linemen as well. They like use them as the resource now.
I think it's like of the utmost importance for guys in the age now to find your place in the offseason. You don't have the reps. So how do you make up for those reps? You know, in my career, when I wasn't able to practice after I had my patella issue 10 years ago, I went into like visualization stuff. So I love to go put some headphones in. I'd go out on the field and I'd play games and take snaps and watch tape of who I'm facing and just emulate their moves. And in my mind, play and block them. I'd find ways to get my reps, you know, and guys would laugh at me all the time. I'd have every contraption out, like bands around my, you know, arms and freaking weight vest on. And, you know, I always create, I found some new way to make it stressful.
Yeah.
And so, but like, you've got to find a way to create your reps. And I think that's really more the issue than anything with these young guys is like, when you're coming into the league, don't think that like OTAs is enough. Don't think that training camp is enough. Like, it ain't enough. You need so many more reps. And the only way you're going to get them is if you're internally driven to go find them. And finding these O-line coaches out there, these off-season programs that you can be a part of, whether it's Duke, whether it's other guys out there that are doing a good job, and really looking into that. And I think the agents, too, could do a better job of understanding if I have O-linemen, like this day and age, I've got to have a plan for them to have preparation and time to get ready other than just when they're with their team.
Yeah, I think this is where, you know, the lack of older guys in the NFL, I think, hurt a little bit too. Because as you mentioned, like when you're a young guy, you come and you don't know any better, right? Like if you go to an offensive line with a bunch of young guys, you might not know any better. You might not know. You might think OTAs is how this goes. It's never going to change. I mean, that's the way the NFL is now, right? So like these young guys, to your point, like got to lean on ex-players or people in the know, their offensive line coach, hopefully, to figure it out. Cause you don't have, when I came in the NFL again, like I keep saying, I feel like the old guy's talking now, but like I had an older guy. It was like, you're doing this. Like you were coming with me. You're by my hip. I played 9 years. You're just going to do everything I do for the entire season and we'll get you on the right path.
Yeah, that's how, you know, Willie Anderson was for me. I mean, when I got in the NFL, Willie Anderson was amazing for me in that way and taught me things. And then from there on, he left after my third year and it was like, all right, I take it from here. But I look at it, even COVID these last 2 years. I mean, I changed my house garage into a training facility and O-line and I have trained there for the last 2.5 years together. And it's wild. Like every young guy would come in. It's like, hey, come to the house. Got a trainer for us. We'll go out and do drills together down the street, like stuff like that. And to your point, I mean, not a credit to me, but as much as like if I'm not here, right? And they were really young up front after Sullivan and Saffold left. Like, what do those guys do during these last couple of years of COVID? Like, what are guys doing in the offseason? Like, what was the plan? Like, if you lived out in California and there's nowhere to go train, there was nowhere to go do anything, right? Like, so it's interesting to think about, like, what was the plan for all these guys? Because most of them would have just been trying to figure it out in their garage. I can remember Austin Blythe had like one of those mirror workout things in his house. That's what he did every day for the offseason because he didn't want to come to California, you know? So it's like, that was his offseason program.
Wait, he used one of those, like, was it a title? What's it called? Tonal.
Yeah.
Blythe, sponsor of the show.
He used a tonal for an entire offseason and showed up to camp. He's ready to ride, you know? So,
wow.
You got to figure it out. But yeah, I mean, it was a wild couple of years there. And to me, to your point, I mean, having those guys here at the house with me training every day, getting to see kind of what my daily rhythm was, I think it was definitely something that they learned from and was beneficial to me because I had young guys around to work out with. But I think it's one of those things. Having a veteran around is a big deal.
Do you think offensive line coaches and offensive linemen are on kind of the same wavelength a lot of times? Like I just watch games. I feel like sometimes it's just kind of like they're not on the same wavelength and they don't communicate as well. And they just, there's things on the games. I'm like that's not good. Not good.
Yeah. I thought one of the rarest, as far as just communicators, even Paul was pretty a chill guy. He wasn't really an engaged guy in a game, but Aaron Cromer, when I was with him, it was really cool. Like he would get mad at you, but you'd have like full-on conversations like, hey, man, we're having trouble on this double right here. Like, I think I'm going to go hands. Like, oh, yeah, go hands then. You know, what's he doing? You know, you'd have, like, full conversations about, hey, what's another option? Like, well, they're you know, one gap slanting on us. Oh, okay, well, then instead of trying to forearm them, you know, go hands and pass them to the next guy. I'm like, okay, cool. Like, you'd walk off the sideline, like, with a full-on, all right, here's our plan for how to go get this block in the next drive. Now, granted, we had Saffold and Sullivan. We had some veterans, so it was easy to have those conversations. But, yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the things right now to me is sometimes I get the feel that some of these O-line coaches are just trying to get to that coordinator spot or just trying to move up in the offensive spot. And I don't know if they're truly like O-line-centric mentality – how we like actually all get better, grow together as a group as much as some are across the league. And so I think you kind of see the ones who are the old school way. Of, this is my group and this is who we go to war with. I think you see a difference in the way those guys play up front. You really do.
You mentioned earlier back, and this is an issue, a call issue, whatever, but like the college game, right? It's so different now where a lot of times you're just like getting in someone's way, getting set up again and going. Is people kind of blame like the college game doesn't have guys ready to play in the NFL. I find that kind of a weak excuse because their job is not to get ready for the NFL, it's to win college football games. Do you see that as though a problem when guys kind of, is they're coming up into the NFL from college football?
Oh, there's no doubt. I mean, the way you block in college is just night and day different from what you're going to do in the league and who you're going to face and the leverage. I mean, I can remember, you know, I obviously had a couple really good players in the SEC that I faced, but like when I wasn't facing David Pollack or one of these SEC guys, Bobby McRae, you name it, like these guys that were really good at Florida and Georgia and whatever, like it was like, man, I don't even know. I mean, I think I was just out there like having fun. It didn't feel like competing really, like, right? So when I got in the league and the first time, you know, you feel a guy hit you with a bull rush right down your face, it's like, okay, that's Justin Smith just right down the nose of
Cowboy.
Me. Yeah, I was like, all right, so this is NFL football. Okay, I got to get my feet in the ground at some point. And I just think it's totally different. I think the challenges are way different.
Yeah. It's funny. There's always like a come to Jesus moment when you get to the NFL. And like we all, Justin Smith is a bad one to have. Mine was Charles Johnson, who was a Panthers defensive end. Like he was so strong. And I just didn't know how to, we did board drill every day. It was me against him in training camp. I did not know how to hit him properly. And I just got my ass kicked every day until a veteran, a guy was like, look, here's the deal, buddy. Stop trying to be perfect. Stop trying to get your feet in the ground. Just the snap of the ball, just drive out your stance and you have a huge giant collision. Don't worry about your footwork. Just freaking fire off the ball. And again, it was like an older guy kind of taught me like, yo, like this is how this drill works. You don't get your butt. Do they even do like one-on-ones anymore? The board drill?
You know what's what? No. You don't have any board drills anymore. You might get a little half line every now and then for like two reps so nobody gets hurt, though. They got a quick whistle and like, you know, you might get two in, but that's about it. Oh. But you barely get one-on-one pass rush. I mean, shoot, some of these guys don't even want to do one-on-one pass rush because it's funny, like the O-line coaches don't want to do one-on-one pass rush because they don't want like, hey, it looks bad if we're getting beat. You know, and it's like,
wait, what?
Oh, yeah, there's guys out there. I've talked to some guys across the league. Like, hey, my coach doesn't like one-on-one. He doesn't like, it looks bad on us.
Well,
like,
of course it looks bad. It's a shitty drill. We're not set up to, but, like, you need to take reps.
You got to, right? So that's what I mean is that there's a lot of teams out there that you are dealing with a lot of different issues in the O-line position, in my opinion, in the league today than we didn't have. I mean, that's just the truth. And so schemes are harder. Exposure's different. You know, you're not getting as many practice reps. And then also, I just don't know if there's as many true O-line guys invested into O-line play in the NFL as there was at one time.
A couple more here. How have the rule changes affected us, right? No cutting in space, obviously. They've kind of taken away some of the techniques that we like to use, the slingshot, things like that. Like, that feels like it doesn't help offensive linemen.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's going to continue to get more difficult. I think you're going to look at it, I would imagine, after this year's conversations, leaving these sifts across the formations with tight ends and things that have always been a part of the game, you're going to start to see a change and this kind of stuff. And it's wild. I saw the one yesterday called on, you know, them cutting Bosa on the edge there. Oh. Man, that just seems like what is wrong with that play? But
the Chiefs did that three times before that and didn't get called. That's the thing about it. Like, if you're going to do it, be consistent. Now, this one was a tad bit further wider. Like, the other ones, the back came straight downhill and Bosa kind of played off the tackle a little bit inside. But, like, you let him do it three times earlier. Like, why now? Took a touchdown off the board. That's the problem. Yeah. Officiating is a whole other story. Like, just be consistent, guys. Like, come on.
No, so I think that stuff's going to get wild because I don't think people understand, too, like running backs and tight ends sometimes, that just their position, like that's the only way they could possibly take guys on. So, you know, I, the only way I could see those stick is that inevitably everything goes back to the quarterback. And if you're going to start telling running backs they have to stay up on some kind of sift protection where they're going to end up on Nick Bosa or defensive end of some kind, they're going to get annihilated into the quarterback, which is going to result in quarterbacks getting hurt, which means that they won't take the rule away. So I'm going to hope that it's going to all funnel back to protecting the quarterbacks, and hopefully we don't go too far with that rule. But yeah, I think obviously there's a lot of things that are affecting O-line play. You know, you start to see it now, even more so the hand stuff. I remember when I got in the league, it was like, if your hands are inside and your feet aren't beat, you're good. But now it's like, there's no regard for that. It's just like whether they think you might have restricted. It didn't even have anything to do with you holding or where you are in your body. Like, what do you want guys to do? We can't see the ball.
That the worst penalty to me is the one where the quarterback leaves the pocket. Oh. And they flag the tackle. You're like, I don't see him leaving. Like, my hands are where they're supposed to be. Like, I'm not, my hands aren't out. My hands are, and like, I don't see the quarterback. Why am I getting flagged for that?
Yes. Yeah. It makes no sense. And that's the tough thing. You know, fans at home are mad at the guy. Like, why are you holding? It was a touchdown. And it's like, dude, you have no idea where the ball is. I mean, absolutely none at that point in the protection. It's just, you would think that some of these, and we don't want to get into the refs things, but you would think that some of them would just be some judgment. Like, hey, you know what? That actually, I don't know how in the world he would know. So I'm not going to throw a flag on that.
I'm with you on that. All right. Let's end with this. Speaking about slingshot. All right. About 4 years ago, there was an article that came out that I helped talk about the slingshot, and they were outlawing it basically. And I called the Rams, your offensive line, lazy because y'all were grabbing people from behind on slingshots. I believe you called me a douche on Instagram. I don't know. I want to clear the air here. Was it wrong for me to call you guys lazy for grabbing people from behind?
Well, I know I didn't use the word douche because I don't even think I've used that one. But yeah, but I was upset. Here's the thing is I actually had never used a slingshot in my career until I got to the Rams. Aaron Cromer talked the slingshot.
I love it.
Yeah, I love it too. I loved it too. But I felt like lazy was a bad description for.
Okay.
You know, I O lineman, it's like this. You know, we can call ourselves fat. You know, we can talk about our other personal, problems we have. Sure. Right. But, you know, lazy is a bad word to use.
Lazy technique. I didn't say you were lazy,
it was lazy. Technique. Lazy's lazy. All right. Don't get into that with me. That's like saying that was a soft technique. I'm not calling you soft, but it was a soft technique. But no, we're good.
I know we're good. I'm just saying, like, was it fair for me to call that lazy
it
technique?
Wasn't lazy. That was actually how we were taught to do it.
Grab? Like
yeah, the grab and pull through. Yeah. So
no, I know. I mean, Andy Heck taught in Kansas City. It was like my favorite thing ever. You would just kind of like pull, like, but y'all from behind.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
Y'all were like grabbing, like, I was like, it's their fault. It's the Rams' O-line fault.
It's our fault. Well, here's the news. And I love this guy to death. He's one of the best linemen in the game. Trent Williams does the most lazy shots in the history of the game.
Yes.
But he never gets called for them.
No.
Ever. It's unbelievable. You could make a highlight tape of about 60 plays that would be the most egregious holds you've ever seen. And Trent isn't called for it ever.
Why not? Is it because he runs his feet? Like he never stops moving.
I think he's so fast. They don't even see it. It's like, what? They don't even know what just happened.
Did you see yesterday? He had that block on that wide receiver screen where he basically beat he wasn't supposed to block the DN, I don't think, but he beat Frank Clark like to the spot and then turned around, just like blocked him. Like what's wrong with this guy?
Dude, it's not even fair. Like, he should be like an O-lineman / something else, because it's not fair that the rest of us have to be graded in the skill set that this guy plays
at the same level. But, like, then you have other guys, man, just, like, aren't as physically gifted. That just, like, my brother kicked ass, man. He had, like, I tell him all the time, he had, like, an F grade for this combine. Like, he guy couldn't jump more than 4 feet off the – 4 inches up – 4 feet. 4 inches off the ground. That's the thing about offensive line play. Like, you can get it done so many different ways.
You can. And that's kind of, like, what I think about the position is that, man, like, you got to find your way. And like, don't let anybody tell you because you're not fast enough, strong enough. I know plenty of guys that couldn't bench crap. But you know what? They could find ways to play the game. Like, that's just the truth. You know, and so I think you have to find your way and never let anybody put any boundaries on you and what you're capable of. And I think that's the thing. I see guys come in that are freaks of nature that don't make it. I see guys that, you know, end up playing pretty well and finding out who they are. But then there's guys who you're like, man, I don't know athletically if this guy's an athletic bone in their body, but they just know how to stay in front of people and they know how to block people. And so I think that's what's really cool about our position is there's no one shoe. Like, man, there's so many different ways to do it and execute it. And I just hope that O-line coaches continue to embrace that mentality, that there's so many different guys that can play this game. Don't just be looking for one way to do it.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe, now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
All right, let's end with this. Who's your favorite young offensive lineman to watch right now? Young, you mean a couple guys to watch. Who's your, like, you watch, you're like, dude, this guy, young cat is good.
You know, obviously, I think it's fun to watch some of these top guys in Sewell and some of those guys. Yeah. I mean, I've always loved Slater. He just... I don't know. He's just so smooth, man. And I hated seeing him get hurt because I got to see him in the opener and talk to him a little bit. But, you know, I think for me, I think the young guys, obviously I'm going to pay attention to tackles, but Lane's one of my favorites right now.
Oh, yeah.
For the older guys, just because, I mean, just, dude, it's just, it literally looks like the guys out there just sipping coffee and smoking cigarettes and like playing football at the same time.
Because he jumps out of his stance. And he just kind of like hangs out there. He's arms. I remember one time we were at Masterminds this summer. We were talking to Lane and we're talking about the double under, right? Because like that's, he's a double under guy. So for those who don't know, it's basically you take your both your hands and you come up like underneath the defender, essentially, right? From bottom to high. Not everyone can do it. You have to be a large human most often to do a double under. And I was like talking about some long arm thing. He's like, yeah, I don't care about that. Like my arms are longer than everyone else's. Like I'm not worried about it. Like, I'm like, what do you worry about? He goes, I don't know. Like, I guess if a guy can knock my hands down, but he's like, my arms are so long, I don't care about a bull rush. I'm like, sorry, buddy. All right. Problems no one else has.
Yeah, exactly. Long arms are a big factor for a tackle. But I think, there's a lot of guys. I think Vera Tucker in New York, man, God, it's been fun watching him kind of bounce all over the place and play well. But I think that, to me, that's the exciting part is that I think everything in the league goes around, and I think right now we're headed back to like a version of maybe some physical football coming back to the game, and you watch some of these teams that are going to run it and play defense are having success, and I really can't wait because I hope that continues and we get back to some of these true monster mash duo power, get some of these games going because the second level in these other positions are just getting smaller and smaller.
Yes.
So I see why more teams aren't just saying, hey, let's just run the football and find ways to run it well.
I know. That's why I think we're going back to, not to get off track, like 13 personnel, because guys, everyone's smaller now. Like you might as well just like line up with more tight ends. You're going to match with a 210 pound nickel safety. Like you can't match. That's it for another podcast, but you're right. Everyone on defense is getting smaller to match everyone else. Andrew, I appreciate you joining us. Great conversation. Glad we had this on Twitter. Glad to a podcast. I'm glad we cleared the air about my lazy comment. Yeah. It did bother me a little bit. I felt bad. I try to stay positive when talking about offensive line play. I feel like there's too many negative people, but I said lazy. I kind of felt bad. I said it. I clear the air. I feel better now that we talked.
Thank you. I'm glad you got that off your chest. And now we feel good about it.
Yeah. We talked. All right, buddy. Thank you so much. We can find you Amazon Thursday Night Football. Are you doing anything else right now?
That's it right now, baby.
Thursday Night Football.
Yeah.
Rocking the hoodie. And the sport coat.
O-line, baby. Let's go.
I love it. Fantastic. All right, buddy. Thank you so much.
All right, man.
All right. Thank you to Big Whit for coming on. Hope you guys enjoyed that conversation. We're powered by the Varsity Podcast Network. We'll be back in a couple of days for our wagering podcast. Please let me know if you like this. More interviews. We can do interviews. Do as much as we want. It's my podcast. I do what I want. Let me know about interviews. At Jeff Schwartz. Send me a message. Talk to you in a couple of days. Take care.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of plan investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.